Hey there, listeners. Welcome and thank you for tuning into part two of the Startups Basics podcast. And the theme for this podcast today is getting ready to get in front of investors. Just a side note, in case you haven't listened to part one and you're new to startups, I urge you to go back and listen to part one because there's some terms that I'm going to use that might help with this particular episode. So moving on, let's assume that you are someone who has created your own startup and now you are ready to seek some funding. Let's say, after all, you've heard so many stories about, you know, this startup or that startup getting, you know, term sheets from angel investors or VCs or PE firms. So right there, I named three different types of investors and a new term called term sheet. So let me explain each one of these in turn. So what's a term sheet? Basically, it's a letter of intent which makes a formal but not a binding offer of funding with certain terms and conditions. Okay. So the terms of a term sheet basically defines how much money you're going to get and in exchange of how many shares and what are certain conditions associated with that. And when you have investors take shares in your company, that's called taking stake in your company. Okay, it basically really means how much ownership that the investors have taken up in your company. So let me explain the different types of investors, right? So I mentioned the very first one is angel investors. And these tend to be basically solo operators, and they are very familiar with a specific type of industry because that's their background, and they tend to invest generally in their own industry. So what it means is for you, if you are, let's say, in banking, you should typically seek an angel investor from the banking industry. Now, the typical amount of money that an angel investor invests is, let's say, between 50 lakhs, could be less sometimes, up to 2 crores, typically. So the other thing about angel investors, you might be wondering, why are they so called? Well, they're called angel investors because they believe in you. This is a high risk situation. An early stage startup is a very high risk situation, and only someone who's like an angel would take such high risks. And the other thing is, once they invest in you, and because of the industry background, they will guide you and sort of mentor you, so to speak. They are your guardian angel in your journey. Now, the second type of investors I mentioned is venture capitalists. These people are a little bit bigger. They are not solo. They are much more organized. Not that the angels are not organized, but they are like a small, think of it like a small consulting firm that have pooled in money from several different investors. And those investors who are putting in their money are called limited partners. So I'm just going to give you some jargon here, just so that you know. And the people who are managing the money in a venture capital firm are called general partners or GPs. So typically as a startup, you would approach a GP for funding. And GPs are very hands-on and they're involved with making decisions on giving you the money. Whereas the limited partners who put in the money typically are not that involved with the decision-making on giving out the money. VCs also tend to invest their money in parts called chunks or Series A, Series B, Series C. And typically a Series A just means that this is your first round with a venture capitalist and they will give you some milestones that you must hit. So for example, if you are, let's say, an app, a B2C app, a business to consumer app, you know, typically, like, and I'll give you an example of a B2C app. Everybody knows Zomato, right? You order food. You are the consumer. You and me are the consumer. And you're ordering from a business called a B2C. And a B2B, on the other hand, is a startup, which is a business, and doing business with another business. So I give an example of this company I came across that's making furnace burning, you know, biodegradable waste. But their customers, not you and me, they tend to be factories and companies that are using furnaces, right? So that's a B2B company. So that was a quick digression. So coming back to VCs and Series A. So Series A is your first round of funding, right? Post-angel. And they will typically, just to give you an idea, they'll invest somewhere between 15 crores to 75 crores in money. So this is, we're talking about big money, right? So with this Series A, they will expect you to reach certain milestones, right? So if you were to come to a VC, your B2C app is, let's say, got 500,000 downloads, sorry, 100,000 downloads, they might expect you to go up to 500,000 or a million downloads, and they might expect you to become profitable, have a better brand. So they will give you a specific milestone, and then you will qualify for Series B, and they'll give you another chunk of money, and so on and so forth. So that is the second category of investors here I just talked about. The third one I mentioned is a PE firm, a private equity firm. So PE firms tend to be even more organized as compared to a VC firm, and they tend to be a funding outfit that will buy your company and make it ready for an IPO. Now, I'll explain IPO in a second, but or they might take your company and sell it to another large enterprise like a Reliance or a Tata, right? So coming back to IPO, that stands for initial public offering. This simply means getting listed on the stock market so the general public, like you and me, can buy your company shares on the stock market, okay? So to reach an IPO stage, startups need to become pretty darn big. For example, Ola and Flipkart, who are such well-known startups, brands, that they still haven't gone public, and they do plan to go very soon on IPO, which is in year 2021, which you are in right now. And this kind of height of success for startups that reach these stages is called, they are called unicorns. Okay, now just to give you some fun idea, facts over here, my little research shows that India so far has produced 55,000 startups, and only about 11 or 12 of them have reached the unicorn status, and none of them have gone IPO yet. There's a lot of buzz about a bunch of companies going on IPO. Just to give you an idea, some of these unicorns are pretty recognizable names like Paytm, Ola, Baiju, Oyo Room, Swiggy, Zomato, Big Basket. So these are companies that have taken a pretty long time, and they've gone through your angel rounds, they've gone through VCs and perhaps even PE firms, and now they're going to go IPO. So it sounds a little depressing, not so encouraging. You know, think about it, like 50,000 startups in India, and none of them yet have gone to IPO, and only like 10 or 12 of them have become unicorn. But, don't despair, because most of the companies, most of the startups, if they don't do IPO, they almost certainly get bought out by another company, another bigger company, like a Tata or a Reliance. Okay, so that's called an exit strategy. The exit strategy could be you could get bought out, or your PE firm buys you out, or you go IPO, right? That's what's called an exit. So I've gone too far into this journey about IPOs and mergers and acquisitions. Let's zoom right back to the beginning, okay, where we were talking about early stage startups and how do you raise money, right? So if you are one of those companies that has just an idea on paper, it's called, sometimes it's jokingly called slideware, because all you have is slides, right? So slidewares generally don't tend to get any funding, not even from angels. So what you have to do is you will have to go to your friends, your family, and sometimes people call it jokingly fools. These are the only people who would have faith in you to let you prove your idea. And once you have proven your idea, you can go to angels. And what do I mean by proving your idea? We've discussed that in part one. It's basically getting some traction, building a little prototype, a minimum viable product, even getting some customers, okay? So like I said, very rarely you will get an angel to fund your startup if you're just on paper and on slideware. So now we are coming to the meat of this podcast. So I am going to give you a rundown of 15 extremely important things that you need to prepare for before you get in front of investors. So I suggest that you grab a piece of paper and a pencil or a pen and write down these 15 points. And if you don't have it handy, don't worry, you can always go back and replay this and make notes second time around. So these 15 things also are known as something that the investor will investigate in your startup and yourselves and your team. It's called due diligence, okay? Which means basically it's their structured research on your startup to see if it meets their criteria to do investing. Basically minimizing their risk, okay? Now these 15 things, I'm gonna give it to you one by one. These are the same 15 things. If you put it in your pitch, in your pitching deck, when you're pitching to investors, I guarantee you will get funding, okay? So listen carefully. So the very first thing, you have to explain your value proposition, okay? There are four things in value proposition that you must explain. What is your basic business idea? Number one, okay? Does it have a big enough market? I explained this in part one, right? The third item in value proposition is it fulfilling an unmet need? Okay, so you explain that. Now the fourth thing is kind of related to the third thing, is if your idea is not fulfilling an unmet need, then it's got to have something that is better than the existing products in the market. What is that? You better be able to explain that. And the last thing is, can your business be scaled? Is it a scalable model? Can you, with minimum resources, ramp up your business and increase your sales tenfold, 20 times, a non-linear relationship? I explained that in part one as well. So these are the five things in your value proposition. Okay, so that was number one. Number two, in your list of 15 things, show how you're going to make money. In other words, what is your, quote unquote, the term that's used usually is business model. What is your business model? How do you make money in your idea? So some examples of how to make money is, do you have a license fee? Do you charge by subscription? Do you support it by ads? Are you putting a white label, meaning like others can badge your product and sell it as their own? That's called white label. Or there's some kind of a secondary revenue, like Google does, you know, like they do a search engine, but people who are searching, what they're looking for is being collected, which is metadata, and they're selling that data, right? That's called an indirect revenue. So item two was about how do you make money? What is the business model? And I gave you some examples of different models. So you should be able to explain how you will make money. Yeah, it could be one of those five or six things I mentioned, or it could be something totally different. The third item in your list of 15 things is, what is your USP, your unique selling point or moat? How are you going to be better than the competitors? How are you going to protect yourself? We talked about it in part one. So you have to be able to convincingly explain to the investors how you are going to protect your turf. Okay, so that was item number three. Item number four is how you and your co-founders, and listen to this carefully, you need to have co-founders. You cannot be a solo operator in your startup. Investors are always looking for a team of founders. Understandably so, because startup is not a joke. It's a lot of work, and usually, you know, more than one head is better, because you can work with each other, you can bounce off ideas with each other, you're complementing your skills, and you will be braver. You know, there'll be tough times and you will feel like quitting. But if you have a co-founder, you will not do that. So this is very important to be able to show who are your co-founders, and most importantly, how well do you know each other? Have you worked together and shown some successes? Yeah, oftentimes I see, I have a co-founder, you know, and there's just a name. Now, that's not enough. It's what you need to show is that you have worked as a team, you have gelled together. And the same thing about item number five. So extending beyond the founders, do you have a good team? Do you have a bunch of people that are trusted lieutenants in your startup who will do all the, like, the development, the marketing, and so on and so forth? So who are these people? Do they have the right kind of background? Do you guys have a good history of working together and getting along with each other? Okay, so item number five. Item number six is something that I already touched upon a little bit, is how are you guys as a cohesive unit getting along together, the founders and the employees, the early employees, that is. You have to show some team effort and show some, the joint effort that you have delivered some milestones. Often I see people talking about, we have so-and-so waiting, and as soon as we get funding, they're going to jump on board. Well, that's a red flag. It's not a good thing, okay? So that was item number six. Item number seven is a little bit complicated to explain, because I'm going to introduce some terms that you have not heard before, but let me give it a shot. So this is about how much of the market you're going to capture. And I'm going to introduce three acronyms here. TAM, Total Addressable Market, SAM, Serviceable Addressable Market, and SOM, which is SOM, Serviceable Obtainable Market. So let me explain each one at a time. TAM is Total Addressable Market, which is the entire universe of your customer base. So for example, if you're selling books in English, so your total addressable market is, you know, anybody who reads English books. Now, serviceable addressable market is if you are selling non-fiction books, then your market is not everybody who reads English books. It is people who are reading non-fiction English books. Okay, so now it's shrunk a little bit. Now, the third item was serviceable obtainable market. It is actually the number of customers you can feasibly capture. Meaning you start your business, you're selling non-fiction books. Out of the millions of people who are reading non-fiction books, how many can you actually make your customers? And obviously, it's not going to be all of them, right? It's going to be like 5 or 10% of them. So you need to be able to show in your pitch book how you are arriving at your TAM, your SAM, and your SOM. Okay, be clear on that. Great. Now, how are we doing, folks? Now, we are up to item number eight, which is traction, or also known as validation. So what have you done so far to prove that your idea will work? Do you have an MVP or a POC? Do you have any actual sales? Can you do a demo with your product? Do you have any proof of customers? And what kind of revenue you have generated so far? And this is called traction, okay? So this part is an absolute must. You have to have it. In fact, all of them are a must, but this one I want to emphasize it a little bit more, okay? So that was item number eight, traction and or validation. So let's move on to item number nine, which is GTM, your go-to-market strategy, okay? We've defined this before in part one, but I'll point out something. Just quickly summarize. GTM is how, and I'm emphasizing the word, how are you going to capture the market? And the key features of a GTM should be, it should be scalable. Your idea should be such that with minimum resources, you're able to get maximum results. And we talked about some cool ways of doing GTM. The biggest mistake I see people making in stating their GTM is not so much of a GTM, but it's a statement of what market they want to capture. So it's talking about, I want to have 2,000 customers and I want to have, you know, 10,000 subscribers or 50,000 subscribers. That's not your GTM. That's what you want to do. My question is, or GTM should really answer, how are you going to get those 50,000 customers or 10,000 customers? The how part is more important, okay? Item number 10, cash flow projection, right? How much money will you be spending and how much money will you be generating for that money you will be spending? And this needs to be shown for the next 6 months, the next year, the next 2 years, 3 years, and up to 5 years. You have to show high-level numbers in the interest of times, but you have to be prepared to show the detailed logic behind it, convincing logic behind it at some point in time. But it's okay to show the summary on your cash flow projection. Investors would like to see this, okay? So that was item number 10. By the way, I do apologize for that cheerful bird in the background. It is India and it's coming close to summertime. Hopefully it'll fly away soon. The 11th item, which I almost never see, and some startups do provide that, is called a cap table or a capitalization table. So investors would like to know at this stage who in your company owns how much shares in your company. You, the founder, your co-founder, your employees, your trusted lieutenants, and maybe you have given up some equity to some friends or somebody else. So you have to state it in clear terms in a simple table, like this is the name of the person, they have this many shares, and that's that percentage of the company. So just a little tabular format like that, that's all a cap table is, okay? So now we're going to move on to item number 12, okay? What is your valuation according to you? So look, the valuation is a pretty arbitrary number, right? You're like, what do you think your company is worth? You know, $1 million, $2 million, $5 million, whatever, right? But you have to have some logic behind it. And you have to put a what I call a stake in the ground, right? You have to, somebody has to start somewhere. Your investors may argue that, hey, look, you're worth a lot less. And in rare cases, they might even say you're worth more, right? So you have to make the starting assumption on what your valuation is. Now, based on that valuation, obviously, the reason why it's important, investors would get a fair idea of how much money they can expect, how many shares, right? Item number 13, what are your funding needs? Be clear on how much money you're asking for, okay, exactly how much money in your round of investing. Now, most likely we're talking about an angel round. So typically people ask for like anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million or sometimes $1.5 million. So this amount needs to be stated by you. And the next item, item number 14, talks about how you're going to spend that money. Okay, now that you said you want, let's say $1 million, you want to spend X amount in engineering development, product development. You need Y amount of that money to do some marketing and some more for hiring some key people, whatever, right? But you need to be clear on how you're going to be spending this money. Now, a note of caution, be careful, because if some of what you're saying here in item number 14 on the allocation of funds needs to tie back to your GTM strategy. So if you have a GTM strategy, clearly it has to have some kind of a linkage here with how you're going to spend the money, okay? Sometimes I don't see that connection, but there you go. fairly obvious. So that was item number 14. Now, coming back to the very last item, and again, I rarely see this, but you must present it if you can. What is the ROI potential, the return on investment potential for the investors? You got to give your investors some idea of, let's say, you know, hey, if you give me, you know, X amount of dollars to invest in my company, I'm going to make it five times the amount that you're going to give me in X number of years, right? So 5, 10, 15, 20, these are, you know, just to give you, I'm not just picking numbers out of the air, but these are realistic numbers. I mean, this is what the expectation is for startups these days. So very high growth, but there you go. That's why you are in a startup. So quite a few things here, 15 things I listed. And as I said, right at the beginning, I think I did mention it, that you put these 15 things in your PowerPoint presentation, and that is also known as a pitch deck, a pitching. You're pitching to somebody, right? You're pitching to the investors. So that's why it's called a pitch deck. And it's usually a PowerPoint. And if you can combine it with some demos, live demos, it would be even more fantastic. And the typical time you get is about, you know, 25 minutes to a half an hour, no more than that, because that becomes too long. So you should be able to do it, okay? Now, while I was going through the 15 things, I did mention some important tips, but there are a few more tips that I'd really like to emphasize, which will be helpful for you, are the following things, okay? So when you're making a pitch to the investors, I find that the founders find it difficult to explain the value proposition. Because it takes some practice, trust me. It's very hard. It's not that easy for a founder to get in front of an investor and explain, because it's clear in their heads, you see. But to communicate that to someone who is listening to the idea for the first time, it can become a little challenging. You'll often find that when you're explaining your idea to somebody, their eyes will glaze over because they have stopped following you. And this is the reason why there is a problem, and I'll explain. You're spending too much time on why your idea is good. And I'm telling you, this is not that important, because look, you're in front of an investor. They're already convinced that your idea is good and there is a need in the market. So you need to spend that valuable time explaining how you're going to do it, okay? So don't spend too much time why your idea is good, but spend more time explaining how you're going to implement your idea, why it's unique and how you're going to implement, okay? The second common mistake is that you may have missed a few, if not many, of the 15 items that I just went over, okay? So each and every item is a showstopper, believe me. So go back and check if you have all those 15 things in your pitching deck. And one last tip in the common mistakes. You're taking on too much. A lot of founders just like to show that they're going to conquer the world with their startups. Look, thinking big is okay, but you have to show how you're going to execute your plan in reasonably small steps. So show the steps you will take to get to your final big game. Otherwise, no one will believe you. So now you have a pitch deck, and you're ready to get in front of investors. Now, to drum up some leads, you might need what I call, or what we call, is an elevator pitch. An elevator pitch is literally a 30-second commercial. Within 30 seconds, can you explain the value proposition, your idea and your value proposition, that is, to a potential investor or somebody who can lead you to a potential investor? Now, it's so called because typically you bump into somebody in an elevator or a lift in India, as we call it, and you have only 30 seconds to explain your idea, because the journey in the lift is typically 30 seconds. Can you explain your value proposition very quickly? So just for fun, I am going to pretend that I am the founder of Flipkart way back when it was founded, and I'm required to give an elevator pitch for my company, which is Flipkart. So I would go with a pitch that goes something like this. Hey, I want to sell books online because there is a big underserved market in India for people who are very, very busy to browse in a bookstore or even have access to the right bookstores. And the reason why we are going to be successful is because we've figured out a unique way of handling the supply chain challenges in India, vis-a-vis problems associated with deliveries, payments, and returns. So that was exactly 28 seconds to be precise. So notice that the first part of the pitch describes the solution to the problem, which was an how do I fulfill an unmet need? And then the second part of the pitch was talking about my unique selling point or my moat. That is the part about the customized supply chain, if you recall. So this will engage the listener and they will surely ask you more about the moat if it intrigues them. So that's the purpose of an elevator pitch. Now, we've covered quite a bit, so I think it's time to end this on this note, and I will summarize very quickly what we went over in this podcast. So first point was, before you ask for funding, you have to create enough traction with your funds that you have secured from family, friends. I wouldn't say fools, but I'll just stop there. And then the second part we talked about was reaching out to different kinds of investors. And in your case, since you're an early stage startup, reach out to angel investors and seek their mentorship, not just money. And I talked about those 15 things that you must have in your pitching document. And that was the meat of our conversation today. I would invite you to go back and listen to those 15 points. Take a note of it, and I am sure you might just well be the next unicorn. So good luck, and thank you for listening. Hey there, listeners. This was Saibal Sen, your host for today at India Startup Talk. And if you'd like to connect with me, please send me an email at sen@zenesysconsulting.com, or follow our page on LinkedIn, which is Zenesys India Startup Talk. I'd love to hear from you. And hey, if you want to join me as my guest in the next show, I'd love to hear from you. Thank you.